This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring defense attorney, Hidden Killers daily contributor, and host of the Defense Diaries podcast, Bob Motta.
Where are they going to argue this once it does go to trial? How are they going to take this? Because essentially in the statement that was made a couple months ago now, basically stating it was Lori, I was, you know, basically, I'm just paraphrasing, brainwashed. I was doing whatever she wanted. So was Alex. Basically admitting to the crime in that letter, but in saying it was Lori's idea, though. What are you arguing in court then? I mean, what are you saying? I mean, you were part of this. You did it. It was Lori's idea. We're trying you for the murders themselves. You just kind of admitted to doing and being a part of the murders. Isn't that just a straight up admission of guilt? Game over at that point?
In my world, it is. You know, it's like, as we know, they don't have the insanity defense available to them in Idaho. So that wasn't going to be anything that they could use. They do have that one exception that they carved out in terms of, you know, him not being capable of forming the intent to commit the crimes because of a mental defect. I haven't seen anything with respect to prior filing anything with respect to that, meaning, you know, if they would have brought him to or had him evaluated by a forensic psychologist or psychiatrist who would have said, yeah, you know, Lori had like woven this spell over him and he was not able to comport his behavior to the law, that he bought into this entire concept that the kids were demons, that they weren't even humans anymore, you know, which was really, like in terms of the Lori Vallow trial, was a fascinating aspect to Allison and I when we covered that, and we covered it pretty extensively on our podcast. You know, it would have been the defense, you know, with her, you know, that she actually believed that these were no longer her children, that they weren't humans, that they were merely vessels, like the bodies were just vessels, and that they were some form of demon. You know, that she wasn't killing her children or what she viewed as a human being, that she was, you know, releasing her children's souls by killing the demon that was inhabiting their, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a crazy argument, but I don't necessarily know that it's not true. Like, I mean, she's warped.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and it's one thing with her arguing it, because you can really go and look at her and she really does believe this, doesn't she? Is it more of a stretch though to say she said these things and then Chad bought it as well? He doesn't seem to be the one that's buying so much, I don't know, into, but he's also one of these people who presented half of these ideas to her through his, whatever his prophecies or whatever you want to call it, his delusions. It's really what it is. And then it kind of goes down this road of, okay, well, did you believe these things when you said these things to her? And then she went down these roads and started truly believing them? Or what is that? I mean, it almost seems like even a further stretch to think that Chad Daybell believed these things as well.
I see, that was the eternal debate between Allison and I had Lori as the puppet master, that she was searching, going through, you know, multiple husbands, looking for that person that would basically get her to where she needed to be with respect to, you know, this is what my theory is in terms of what's going to be happening. And she found Chad, she had seen his books. She then took his broad concepts and tailored to what she already believed. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it was her reading his books and then she's like, oh my God, like he knows the answer. I think it was the other way around.
Really?
She had always, like, because you could see from various things that she had said in the past that she had that belief system long before she even met Chad in terms of, you know, like he brought to the table the darkness scale, you know, but she tailored it to, you know, exactly what she needed to be. If he came with a number, you know, well, that, you know, JJ's a 4.3 on the darkness scale, Lori would be like, yeah, you know, I think he's closer to like a 7. You know what I mean? Like, it was like she was running the game, man. Like Chad Dumbell was not running the game, like any part of it. So the question becomes, is any jury, would any jury buy the fact that he was so under her spell that he wasn't able to comport his behavior to the law there's no way that, a jury's buying. I mean, he's going down on this thing. Yeah. There is zero chance of him winning that case at trial. And frankly, I don't know what their defense is. Like the defense that, you know, Lori made me do it. It's not a defense.
Like, I mean, and?
He committed the crimes, right? It's like, it's the same as if somebody pays somebody to you know, conduct a hit.
When that document was filed, that motion was filed a while back, stating, you know, Lori made me do it. I mean, was it a motion or just a statement? I don't remember. It was a couple months ago. Where
it was, it's like an affirmative defense or some form of defense.
Was that an attempt at maybe trying to get some sort of a plea deal by putting that out there? Because it's, again, I go back to, like, you just admitted guilt in this. You just flat out said you did it. Right. Or at least you walked right up to the line and you're tipping your toe over it. And anyone with their right mind could say, you just said you did it. Like, this is destroying any defense you have. I mean, what was the goal of that filing and those statements being made before trial for murder?
When it happened, I thought it was for that little exception I was talking about, that they carved out the only mental defect kind of defense where, you know, that they won't be able, that they can attack the intent aspect of the statute, because homicide is an intentional act. You have to, that the state has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it was his intent to kill a human being.
Sure.
Like that. And then that's just one of the elements that have to be proven in a homicide. And, you know, when that first came, I'm like, all right, I think that they're going to try the defense that I was suggesting that had Lori allowed her attorneys to do at her trial would have been the proper defense, but she just wouldn't allow for it. Like, she was like, no, like, this is what I believe. This trial is a joke. Like, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. All of this is coming to an end next month for us now.
Yeah.
Like, the end of days in her world is in March of this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, and I'm good. Like, I know I'm good. I'm like one of the 100, you know, I'm the chosen people. So, you know, like, and like, so she wouldn't allow for them to do that. Chad realized that once when she went down, he's like, oh my God, I'm going down. So to be honest with you, I don't know. I don't know what their strategy was in terms of trying to bait the state into giving him an offer that takes death off the table is a distinct possibility. You know, it doesn't mean that it, you know, it was going to work, you know, because the problem is when in Lori's trial, when they were punished, the state, for slow playing the, you know, getting the discovery over them, among other things, and the judge took the death penalty as an option off the table, it pretty much locked in stone that there was no way in hell that Chad was going to get a plea on this thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like one of y'all is going down, and it's at this point, it's Chad. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he'll probably be the first guy. They'll probably run out of the serum for the, you know, for the lethal injection, because I'm sure they're dying to use the firing squad out there. You know, he'll probably be the first guy to die in front of a firing squad out there.
Yeah.
Is the way that I see it. But like, strategically, I don't know the answer to why they basically would have made him essentially admit to the crimes. You know, I mean, like, I don't see what the play was there.
I mean, unless John Pryor also believes Lori's prophecy that, well, March is coming up, and what does any of it matter?
Look, man, I mean, it's like, you know, when you're talking about, you know, just the state of Utah, man, it's like there's a lot of Mormons out there, and there's all different varieties of the religion. And, you know, obviously Lori and Chad had bastardized, you know, many of the concepts, but, you know, I mean, you're the judge himself, like everybody who's like practicing Mormon, it's the religion.
Out it there. Is
it's
what
people
it
practice, is what it is. You know? So, I mean, it's hard to know who's believing what, you know, but it was such a fascinating trial, because it really was a cult in the sense that they had people that were buying what they were selling.
Yeah.
You know, like holy, like with every ounce of their being, you know. And then when it started to become obvious that Lori was masterminding this play, you know, it just all fell apart for him. And I don't know.
We will wait and we will see.
We'll wait and see. Like, it'll make for an interesting trial. That's for sure.
Without a doubt.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.